Hello, everyone. Oh my goodness, today's episode is so great. I get to interview the amazing Cordelia McFadden. She is a board-certified holistic nutritionist, and she is the dean at the most comprehensive nutritional college in Canada. She has overcome and battled debilitating health issues herself, and she believes that a water bottle is the perfect accessory. I here definitely agree. Now, if you are ready to make a change and not just what's on your plate, but add movement and mental mastery to the menu, then this is the interview for you to listen to, because Cordelia chats all about our epigenetics and trauma, and we delve into so much more than that. We talk about nutrition, stress, trauma, okay, different ways that we can really support our gut and hormonal health and our health in general, and how all of this together affects our longevity. So I hope you really enjoy this episode as much as I did chatting with Cordelia, because she is just a wealth of knowledge. All right, everyone, let's listen in.
Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I am super excited today to invite on the lovely Cordelia, and she's going to be chatting about epigenetics and trauma. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. It's really a pleasure to be here.
It's fantastic. I was just saying before we hit record how I am, you know, geeking out about this subject and how I was already talking to people and getting so excited before this podcast interview. So I'm all geared up to talk about it.
Absolutely. No, I'm so excited to be here. Honestly, you know, both of us are nutritionists. I'm over here in Canada. I'm on the west coast of Canada on Vancouver Island, just outside of Victoria. And it's always great to have these conversations, and podcasts are just a way for, I think, people to sort of eavesdrop on what nutritionists chat about. So I'm really happy to dive deep into this topic with you.
Yeah. And as I said, it's like, oh, I'm like, as same thing as a nutritionist, I'm like, oh, I can really geek out about this topic and, you know, yes, ask questions and all the rest of it. So it's going to be great. But can you just start off by giving our listeners a bit of an introduction to yourself? You know, tell us a little about who you are, what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, name is Cordelia. I born and raised in Calgary, Alberta. And, you know, I think for many of us who've kind of gone into this holistic health field, whether it's in nutrition or anything else, it was really born out of personal necessity. You know, all throughout my childhood, early teens, up until the age of 20, when I moved to the UK, I just had, you know, stomach issues, and in hindsight, a lot of other things that were related to the immune system. But, you know, the doctors were always looking for something major. Fortunately, they didn't, but no one actually ever brought up the issue of food and asked what I was eating. So it actually took me moving to the UK, where I just by chance happened to have a meeting with a doctor who actually for the first time in my life said, well, what are you eating? Do you notice a difference in how you feel with what you eat? And in my head, I just thought, you're out of your mind. I've been going to doctors at this point for well over a decade. Like, if it was this simple, wouldn't somebody have said something? Well, for my case, apparently not. So I'll never forget it. He called out wheat. And I remember thinking, okay, so like what? I'm just going to stop eating pasta and bread? Okay, sure. You know, and you get to that point, if you're feeling unwell in your body, you're just desperate. You're like, okay, whatever someone tells me to do, I'm just going to do it. So that's what I committed to. I was like, okay, I'm not going to eat wheat or gluten. Did that for 2 weeks. And it was like this veil got lifted off of my head. And all of a sudden, you know, my periods, my mental clarity, I wasn't having afternoon naps, just, you know, so many other things. Those were the big things, just a complete transformation. And I thought, oh, is this how I'm supposed to feel? So, you know, fast forward a few more years, got back to Canada, was working as an event manager. And as I recovered my health and kind of created a health team with a naturopath and a nutritionist at that time, I was just really aware that more and more people were starting to come up to me and ask me what I had done. And I thought, okay, well, what worked for me may work for other people and probably would, but I was also just hyper aware of the nuances that each of us has in our life. And I thought, okay, I'm really interested in this. I want to help people. I need to go back to school. So, you know, almost a decade ago, went back to school to become a holistic nutritionist. Now I have my company, Inspired Living Nutrition. I work with women for complex gut and hormonal issues. I serve as dean for the School of Pacific Rim College, where I oversee the most comprehensive in-class, well, online at the moment, program of holistic nutrition. I sit as vice chair for the Holistic Nutrition Credentialing Board, which is an organization that kind of oversees North America. And holistic nutrition in both Canada and the States is unregulated. So we've created a board certification just to provide more clarity in terms of scope of practice to the general public and everybody who wants to work with us. And I'm just having so much fun in the sense of connecting with students and connecting with people through classes that I offer and group programs and one-on-one. So I'm all about women's empowerment through gut health.
Yeah, so, and getting that information out there, which I love.
Yes, yes. Because I often think, you know, my health journey, you know, what's happened to me hasn't been unique, but I'm aware that my recovery to health has been. And really, it's just about educating people to let them know that there's so much inside of them that they can draw on to feel well, and that it's never too late. So.
Yeah. And I mean, there was a number of things you kind of brought up there, but I can definitely relate to having a lot of health issues, you know, and then that giving you that inspiration to want to delve deeper. And then you're like, well, if I can start to heal myself, then I can definitely look at helping others and how rewarding that is for you. But also, you just get so passionate that, you know, if I can do it, then anybody can do it. It's just, you know, having access to that right information. But I also want to touch on, you know, you were sort of saying that it was food, and that was such a simple answer. But I think so much of the time we always think it's going to be more complicated than that, and we look to other things. But I know holistically, you know, I teach Pilates and I run a Pilates and a wellness studio, and I will have some people that come in and they're in pain. But yes, it might be physical pain, but we also holistically, you know, I'll be like, okay, well, what are you eating? What are your stress levels like? How are you sleeping? Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of that comes into it. And I think for me anyway, more and more in recent years, you know, it has become a bit of a movement that holistic nutrition is finally coming to the surface, rather than sort of compartmentalizing that this is this and that is that. Yeah. So I love your sort of whole approach to wellness.
Thank you. And yeah, it is. It's such an honor to be able to sort of walk alongside people on that path of health and just really kind of remind them that, you know, to trust themselves, that they know intuitively, like literally trust your gut. You know, I always say to my clients and my students, like, you are the expert in your health. So don't let anyone diminish how you're feeling, because I think, you know, even with my experience from a young age, I started to mistrust my body and my symptoms because everybody told me that I was fine. Like, all your blood tests are fine. You're normal. And so I think that there can be this dangerous edge of, you know, healthcare systems, where sometimes you place so much trust in a practitioner that you kind of go against yourself. And yeah. And especially, I always call gut and hormonal, you know, issues and conditions, they're invisible. Right? Like, for large part, I mean, I'm a super happy person. I'm very optimistic. I'm smiling. And that can really mask some of the more discomforting symptoms and the bloating and the painful things. So it's guiding people back to that, you know, that gut instinct and that intuition, which is also just a huge part of that holistic health for me.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up, because you're exactly right. We kind of, you know, whether or not it's just being polite to people and ignoring that gut feeling that maybe something's not right. Yeah. Sometimes we're kind of brought up from a young age that we are taught to ignore our sort of intuition in certain circumstances. And so that just becomes normal, you know, and everyone's always like, well, what did the doctor say? Like, I know how you feel, but what did the doctor say? So
and right away we're bypassing it, and it's like, no, like, don't bypass yourself. Like, it's, you know, it's this whole, you know, once I started to feel better with my digestive stuff, I tell you, I had to do so many practices of just looking at my belly in the mirror being like, I love you. And I'm so sorry for how I spoke to you and how I really treated you like an enemy when you were always working for me to feel better. And so there was a real disassociation that I had to work on to just really bridge that, which is, again, something completely different, because that was more of a emotional connection to myself, which is not something that I was really, you know, raised to know that language and the importance of that for me and my health journey, which a lot of people resonate with, which is why holistic health around the world is, you know, increasing in popularity. So
for sure. Now, epigenetics, can you yes. explain to listeners exactly what that is and what it means?
Yeah, epigenetics. So essentially, epigenetics is it's a fairly new field of study, and it's really, you know, looking at gene expression. So, you know, we all have DNA, and epigenetics is really that study of gene expression. So how does our environment, how do things in our external environment influence the genetic expression of our DNA, you know, for better or for worse? So we found out some really interesting information so far, but epigenetics, I mean, it's evolving. So it's one of these things that, you know, I'm not surprised a lot of people haven't heard about it, because in the terms of, you know, science and the medical field, it is so new. So it's, yeah, essentially your genes, your DNA, how are they expressing? Are things turning off? Are things turning off? What's going on in your environment?
And how are these genes, like, could you give us some examples of how epigenetics or our environment may yeah. affect our gene expression?
Yeah, absolutely. So really I'm thinking from the scope of sort of holistic nutrition, you know, like what are some things that, you know, that would affect our epigenetics, good or bad? So, you know, some of the things that we may want to look at is obviously the big one is stress. Like, how is your stress? This is going to, you know, impact your epigenetics and your DNA expression. Are you a smoker? You know, do you exercise? Do you move your body? What do you eat? How much do you eat? Do you drink alcohol? You know, these are some of the big lifestyle considerations that we're starting to draw towards conclusions in the sense of, you know, health outcomes. So are those sorts of things. And then, you know, I think one of the ways to think about epigenetics too, when we're talking about nutrition, is methylation. You know, we hear about methylation, and because that can often inhibit the expression of certain genes, and methylation can turn things off and it can turn things off. And essentially, you know, methylation is one of the mechanisms of epigenetics. So essentially we want to be good methylators. We want to methylate well. And again, the other interesting piece about epigenetics, which, you know, I haven't really found any, you know, complete science on, I would say, is what is the timeline? Can we turn these, you know, genes off and on interchangeably, or sometimes do we switch something and then it's there and that's it? Like, how much control or do we have over turning these things on and turning these things off? You know, if we improve inputs, this is great. How long will that stay before it maybe slips back? Like, how often do we have to keep on our goals when it comes to lifestyle and nutrition to support proper methylation? So for me, because it's sort of an unknown at this point, it's like, well, it's probably good just to err on the side of caution and really good, better, best, and be aware of, you know, your stress, your environment, what are you eating? So again, when we're talking about sort of, you know, DNA methylation in particular, you could add, you know, we know that there's a few key nutrients that really help. So like folate, the B vitamins, in particular B6, B12, you know, choline. So things like, oh, like the broccolis, like the leafy green vegetables, you know, the poultry, like the chicken and the turkey, peanuts, you know, meat, fish, eggs, cheese, fish, all that kind of stuff. These are going to be important things that are going to, you know, assist in methylation, because you're giving your body the key nutrients that it needs. Now, of course, that opens up a whole other can of worms in the sense of, okay, now we're thinking about quality and, yeah. and how much can you get in your diet? And are you supplementing with these things? And for me, Kate, like I'm definitely the nutritionist who is food first. However, I also am aware that we have a major soil issue. Mm-hmm. And even if we are getting stuff from organic farms with organic soil, we are seeing major depletions in micronutrients across the board. So if you're looking to, you know, look at some of these micronutrients in a more therapeutic approach, you know, that's where a nutritionist and a naturopath can really kind of help you dial in the right of the therapeutic dose needed in order to sort of make that positive change. But I mean, you're never going to go wrong with eating, you know, more healthy fats, more, you know, lean proteins, you know, grass-fed meats, and just all the greens that you can. And again, I think the thing for me when it comes to methylation and epigenetics as well is just the stress piece. I mean, it's the one thing. I remember when I started out in the industry years ago, I worked at a health food store and, you know, by far, you know, people coming in were like, okay, what can I do for stress? Just give me the supplements for stress. And, you know, no one, I don't know if, I don't want to say if no one, but it, not as many people really wanted to address the root cause of their stress.
Yeah. So wow. It's usually complicated.
It's so complicated, right? Right? And it's like, okay, I can't give you any more adaptogens. Like at some point you're going to have to address the stress because it doesn't go away. And it is so much more impactful than I think that I think it gets spoken about a lot. However, what the part of the conversation that I think is missing with the stress connection when we're talking about epigenetics and gene expression, and just in general, is tools for people to actually minimize stress. Because stress is so big, everyone's stressed out. And it's like, yeah, okay, well, what can people actually do to like minimize the stress? And I think this is something for me personally, like, how do you have fun? For me, I love Lego. Like for me, when I started to realize like, how can I have fun again? I realized that I classified fun into two groups, like fun as a child and then fun as an adult. And I had mistakenly associated a lot of the things of adult fun, like it had to be drinking or something like that. And then I just started to think, what did I like as a kid? Okay, I like Lego. What else did I like? And then I kind of just like got back to my roots in the sense of, oh, I got back into coloring. I like my Harry Potter 3D puzzles. So I think that sometimes with stress, we as adults, we tend to think of, oh my gosh, I've got to have adult fun for my adult problems. And it's like, no, you just need to have fun and you just need to laugh. And if you have a trouble sort of figuring out what that is as an adult, look back to your youth, look back to your teen years, look back to the times when you were having a lot of fun and do that now. Like there has, you know, there doesn't need to be any rules or regulations around having fun, but stress is, yeah, it's the big one. And I think that also on the stress, it's not even, you know, it's not just those emotional stressors, but I think it's those environmental stressors as well that people aren't aware of in terms of toxicity with air fresheners and new cars and new mattresses and paint and carpets and off gassing from all of these things, which I think is, you know, I always think death by a thousand cuts when people talk about health. Rarely is it one big thing. It's like, whoa, there's just all these little areas that you need to be aware of to sort of make those good, better, best decisions.
But I also think too, a lot of people aren't aware of them because I know when I've spoken to a lot of clients and that they're just like, yeah, but they wouldn't sell that if it wasn't safe, or they wouldn't put that in food if it wasn't safe. And it's like, yeah, but they're not testing at those levels, or, you know, they've tested it on rats, but they haven't actually tested it on humans. And when we look at things like petrochemicals in food, it doesn't matter how much is going in. It's not something we should be consuming at any level. So I think there is kind of that almost sort of trust that, you know, people put into businesses and the regulations that are in place too, that they would protect us, but they're not always there for the right reasons sometimes too.
They're not. And in Canada, like I have a story that illustrates that point perfectly, is that, you know, Canadian government was aware of the potential for trans fats, you know, sort of in the late 60s, early 70s. But it wasn't until, you know, 2019 when it was phased off shelves, right? So, I mean, there's my generation, I was born in 81. They knew at that point that trans fats were not beneficial for human consumption based based on the disease tracking that they were seeing increase in Canadians. Yet it took them how many decades to actually make sure it was off the grocery shelves? So I couldn't agree with you more, Kate. I think that there is a misplaced trust that there's some governing body out there who's like, okay, we're really concerned about Kate. We're really concerned about Kate and Kate's health. So we really need to be sure of what is in this food, what is in this car, what is in this clothes. And again, I can't speak to Australia, but you know, Health Canada is not looking out for the health of Canadians. It has a completely different mandate, right? So
yeah. And I think that's worldwide. Do you know what I mean? In the end, unfortunately, like most things, it comes back down to money. And, you know, that's what drives a lot of the decisions that are made and then the flow on effects to, you know, us as consumers as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, right? And I think that's the kind of alarming thing is that, I myself and so many others, we got into what we're doing because we had to make these changes ourselves because we realized that there was no help. Or that the help was available was not in alignment with our values for health. You know, and don't get me wrong, I love the Canadian medical system. I've had accidents that have required surgeries and doctors and oh my gosh, like there's a time and a place for it. Absolutely. But you know, we have great sick and emergency care in terms of how I think about health and that proactive approach on a physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional level. That's my responsibility. There is no governing body that knows what's important to me and is interested. So I think that sometimes you have this unfortunate health scare or something comes up. And that's usually the first time when you become aware that it's on you. It's really on you. Who's on your health team? Who's going to help you? What are your values with health? I didn't even know what my health values were until I was like, What's important to me? Oh, okay. I want to feel good. This is important to me. This is where I'm going to spend money. But I mean, I had no idea. I had no idea. And I think that that is what's alarming for a lot of people is they get sick, they get unwell, and then they're kind of like, oh, I need to do this. There's help, but no one person is like, oh, we're checking in with you. And it's certainly, you know, the generations are gone when we would have a family doctor. And you would know that family doctor and have a conversation and they would ask about your mom and you would like drop them off a Christmas card like that, you know, in BC and Alberta, doctors legally can see someone for 11 minutes and talk about one symptom.
As is 10. So 10 minutes.
it's shockingly how similar they are and in not a great way, right? And again, this is the thing, right? As someone who has, you know, overcome debilitating gut and hormonal issues myself, and that's who I predominantly serve, there's no way one symptom, like, oh gosh, pick the one that's most uncomfortable. I'm tired. You're tired. That's normal. You have so much on the go, right? And then again, that's where they can dismiss things. Or just like minimize things. And you're like, right, okay, yeah, I'm in that time of my life. I'm super busy. You're right. I guess I'm not sleeping well is really normal. This is all normal. And it's like, well, no, let's redefine what quote unquote normal is.
Yeah. And sometimes that takes some digging. Do you know what I mean? To go through the symptoms, to go through what's going to suit you and your lifestyle as well. So it is a very individual thing too. It's not just take this pill, it'll fix everything, because it's just not how it works.
And medications can be great when they're used appropriately, but I mean, medications, what do? They want to blunt symptoms, right? What are symptoms? They're our body's way to communicate with us. So again, I mean, you know, we can blunt those symptoms for so long, but our body will eventually tell us what it wants us to know. And that's where I kind of, you know, get into that headspace of that's a fear-based health decision when things literally stop you in your tracks and demand your attention. And I think for myself and you, Kate, you're like, okay, no, we don't want it to get to that point. If it is, we can help you, but no, we want to really be like proactive and really acquaint you with your symptoms and what your body might be saying to you so that we can create that support, you know, bring those body systems back to homeostasis.
Yeah. And I love that you've highlighted that that is our body's way of communicating with us, because I know most people sort of view it as, it's really annoying to have this pain. Do you know what I mean? I just wish it would stop, but they don't actually think that this is the body's way of communicating that something's wrong and that this is your cue to change something so that we can get rid of the symptoms, essentially. So,
absolutely. And that's, Kate, that's how I tracked it back to me just having that negative relationship with my physical body, was just all of those, you know, all the discomforting symptoms that I experienced with my gut health, like painful bloating, you know, gas, you know, breakouts, all those sorts of things. I just was like, oh my God, my skin, it's the worst. Like, I have the worst guts. Like, ah, like I was just like trash talking myself all the time. And then I got to this point when I started to feel better. Like, it was very emotional for me, because I thought, oh my gosh, my body is, she's been doing the best that she can. And here I have been almost like waging a separate war on myself. So it was, yeah, it was claiming that part of my body again, and just that sovereignty to be like, thank you, thank you, thank you for everything you're doing. And thank you for talking to me. And, you know, yes, it can be painful and uncomfortable, but I need to really write that down and get very clear on what's happening, so that I can in turn share that with those, you know, practitioners on my health team, so that we can really figure out what's going on here.
And, yeah, and
not blunting them.
You bring up a good point of even just writing down what your symptoms are, because sometimes, you know, you go into an appointment and you're flustered, and you think of like the two biggest things, because you've only got a short amount of time, and you don't recall all these other things that have been happening, or maybe you don't sort of put them together. But as you said, if you can write your symptoms down as they occur, then you've got that list that you can refer to, and then maybe you can get a better overall view if they're all connected as well.
Absolutely. And take that stuff into your doctor. I would just take my notebooks in and be like, on this day, you know, this. And I probably drove them a little bit wild with how much information that I was providing them with. However, you know, this is where you need to advocate for yourself. And part of that personal advocacy when you're talking to your health team is making sure that you have notes, and that you can really clearly and concisely say, this is what I'm feeling. This is when I feel it. This is the intensity. This is the frequency. This is the severity. So that they in turn, because again, you know, everyone who wants to help you, the more you can articulate what you're feeling and experiencing, the clearer and the more impactful, I believe, the suggestions and the recommendations can be. So it's. But again, definitely, we're not taught that, right? Like, it's just like, go to the doctor. How are you feeling? I don't know. I just don't feel right. Well, I don't know. I don't feel right. And I'm guilty of that myself, right? Like, I don't know. I feel off. I just don't feel right. And now I'm just like, okay, I need to be helpful to my health team. It's my responsibility to really track what's going on.
Yeah, totally agree. 100%. Now, can you touch on, like, I know about telomeres and how they may be related back to our epigenetics and that, and our genes, but can you share with listeners a little bit about telomeres and their roles and what we, you know, what they're about?
Yeah, absolutely. When I think of telomeres, I really think about just our age, really, to be honest, in the sense of how important it is to just increase longevity by, you know, ensuring we've got that nutrient density to, you know, keep our telomeres intact. There's a company, I can't remember the name of, I won't even try to say it, but they've got these interesting enzymes that are working on telomeres. And I have not really looked into it, but I'm super curious about that, because I love enzymes, just in the body in general. And so I'm super curious about that telomeres. I don't spend a lot of time in telomeres other than, you know, a little bit of that epigenetic approach. But for me, I just think of age and I just recently came across this new sort of like enzyme study about, you know, how to take these enzymes to sort of extend the life. So I don't know if you've heard about that, but I'm very curious on that.
No, I haven't heard too much about the enzymes, but I'd be interested. But just so listeners know, if you think of a shoelace, essentially, your DNA being a shoelace, telomeres are like the little caps on the end of the shoelace. And when we're being exposed to stress, It could be even trauma. Maybe you're grieving, you've lost a loved one, maybe you're not eating very well. All these sort of stresses wears away that little tip of the shoelace or your telomere. And a lot of the research is sort of showing us that the shorter your telomere, the shorter your lifespan. So we can change that, and we can, you know, eat a healthier diet as we're sort of talking today with epigenetics, or doing all these sorts of things to help increase that length of that telomere, which will help with improve our longevity. So yeah, it's, again, it's another sort of emerging part of the science that I find fascinating, and I'm sure there's going to be more and more sort of come out on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I'm thinking of too, actually, just because bringing it back to just that trauma piece with the epigenetics, is there was some studies in 2012 and 2015, they've got some newer ones, but I think for those of your listeners that are really interested in this trauma piece, they've done some interesting stuff in the sense of with Holocaust survivors, in the sense of how was the stress, has that impacted the DNA, and how has that been in utero then transferred to the family members of the survivors of the Holocaust? And then I've also, like, and that's obviously, I mean, a big traumatic event. So there's people that they can study and find that. I know that they've also done some other studies on men's sperm in regards to sexual assaults and seeing if that transfers into the sperm. So there's really fascinating things. I've also heard some speakers, I couldn't find the science myself, but I'm really curious in the sense of how far back, when we're talking about this intergenerational sort of stress and trauma, you know, I'm really looking forward to when they kind of get a little bit more data in the sense of, you know, this goes back 5 generations, 4 generations, 8 generations. Like, how far back can this potential trauma be imprinted in this DNA?
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating, isn't
like,
it?
Like, that's kind of mind-blowing to me, to be like, what is happening? And then again, just a reminder that ultimately, I think with epigenetics, the takeaway that's really important for me is to know that you have so much control. You know, like, you have so much more power on how you want to feel based on your inputs in the sense of nutrition and just what you're thinking mentally and the language that you're using, as well as your environment. And I think for a long time, it was just, you're bad DNA, you're bad, born with bad genes. Like, oh, sorry about your lot in life, tough luck. And I think that this, you know, I think that this information, it can be sort of like overwhelming and like, what does this mean? But I think the takeaway is that, again, this is just showing you that, wow, you have a lot of control to turn these things off and on. So to me, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And I was just speaking to somebody the other day, because I know, do you know what I mean? A lot of people now, so you can get testing done on your genes to see if you have, say, the breast cancer gene and stuff like that. Yeah. So a lot of people are like, well, you know, I'm probably going to get it because I've got the gene. But this is where, you know, the studies are showing that about 20% of, say, you know, cancer cases and stuff is actually coming back to the gene. The rest of the cases are coming back from the expression of the gene. So if you're doing more of these activities and looking after your body, then you're reducing your risk of these types of diseases exponentially. That, you know, it's amazing.
Across the board. Absolutely.
And I think that's just such an empowering, you know, thing to learn that, yes, you know what, you may possess that gene that may give you a slight increased risk, but if you are eating well, moving your body, managing your stress, you know, hydrating, all of these types of things, we're reducing the risk by so much more. So it's not a life sentence that you're going to end up having it just because you possess the gene.
Absolutely.
I think that's just such a big thing to be able to share with somebody, rather than them sort of feeling like, oh, my mum had breast cancer, so, you know, I'm probably going to have breast cancer.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. And to be honest, I mean, I'm at a point now in my life where I accept full responsibility for my health, and I love my health team, and it's taken me, you know, well over a decade to get to this point. So I'm very sensitive to the fact that it might be very scary and overwhelming to hear that, actually you do have more control than we've ever thought. and you can't just blame it on your genes. Like, I completely can just take myself back to, you know, when I first started out my health journey, and just how overwhelming that sentiment might feel. But again, I think that you know, Kate, for where I am right now with holistic nutrition, I think that we overcomplicate things so much. And I truly believe that the fundamentals of holistic nutrition are really accessible to everybody, because it's managing your stress, it's having that community and connection, having fun, you know, good, better, best, eating, you know, as locally and as seasonally and as much as you can from your own garden, and, you know, drinking water. Like, yeah, we can get super fancy with supplements and all these other things, but listen, we didn't have that, you know, for a long time. A lot of what we have access to now is so new that, you know, it's just, it's all within our control. And it's just about doing one thing, you know, one thing at a time, mastering that, and then, you know, starting something else. Because it's, I think the fad diet industry, this is where people tend to, I've got to do it in 30 days. I got to do it in 60 days. And they look at these really short sprints and it's like, nah, just like work on your hydration. And after that, work on your sleep, like just go, you know, low and slow and just do it. And that in itself can kind of, you know, be difficult because, the, you know, fundamentals of health are really, can be quite boring. Yeah. You're doing the same thing day in and day out. Like it's, you know, like it's just the reality of it. The, you know, the people who I look up to with, you know, they're feeling good. They're doing work that they love. They've got energy for their friends and their family and their personal pursuits. Yeah. They're waking up at the same time every day. They're eating at the same time every day. They're going to bed roughly at the same time every day. Like it's, you know, that changes when there's traveling or work and things like that, but it's a very regimented routine. And I think that in itself is what can kind of trip people up, because it's, yeah, it's not these highlights that you see on social media. It's really a lot of the same old, and it's just, it's getting very comfortable in that routine.
Yeah. Which, with all those tried and true things that we know that works and having those habits that are habits, like you said, they are routine things that happen that aren't sexy and, you know, super exciting, but they work. No. So
tried and true, right? Like it's just, and it's so worth it, right? I mean, for me, you know, talk a lot about values, but health is my number one value. And I think that it's just such a privilege that, you know, for most of us, we have a lot of opportunity and a lot of control in the sense of who we can reach out to for support, who we have access to, especially now in this world of, you know, I'm on the West Coast of Canada, you're in Australia. We're talking about like gut health and epigenetics. Like, this is cool. Like, you can connect to practitioners around the world, you know, like just find people you resonate with. And health is joyful. There may be times of discomfort and, you know, things that taste gross, but, you know, there can be, and there is a lot of joy in health. And it's really about finding people who, you know, share those same values and can make that journey to health. If you're not really where you want to be right now, you know, to keep you accountable, but have fun along the way, because otherwise, I mean, what the heck is the point?
Yeah, really? Exactly. I love that approach. Yeah. Now, if there's one thing that you could, you know, if you had to tell the listeners today, one thing that they could do to change their health today, that they could just go away and instigate, what would it be?
Honestly, Kate, this is so boring, but I think the world would be changed immensely if everybody was well hydrated.
Well, I love hearing that. I hear sleep often comes up, hydration, just, you know, taking time out for yourself. Like, yep. And again, like we were just saying, these things aren't rocket science. They're not, you know, super exciting, but they work. So
I tell you what, Kate, I mean, if you're committed to drinking 80 ounces of water a day, you're not going to have time for much else, because between getting your water ready and your bathroom breaks, you're going to be occupied. So, you know, don't underestimate some of these things. I mean, yeah, when you start drinking a lot of water, your schedule is like, oh, where's the washroom? I'm going to need a washroom every hour because I'm drinking a lot of water. So yeah, it's interesting.
For sure. Now we're going to do a quick lightning round, because I like to find out a little bit more information about my guests. So can you share with us your favorite food?
Okay. Favorite fall and winter food is probably shepherd's pie. Favorite summer food is just, I'm a big fan of grass-fed steak on the barbecue, baked potato, and either asparagus or green beans.
Oh, delicious. Favorite vegetable?
Broccoli.
Yep, that's mine too.
love it so much.
I could eat it every day, like, you know, and I like it all different ways. And it's really funny because one of my daughters loves it and the other one hates it. So it appears on our menu and one will be like chomping down, you know, like I'm eating my tree, and the other one is just like trying to push it around the plate. Like, will it just disappear?
Get
like,
out of here. We're not doing this.
So funny. Your favorite foodie destination?
Oh, wow. You know, I'm a big fan of London, UK. I just, yeah, because I had the opportunity to live there, and I'm a huge fan of curry and spices and spicy food. And once you kind of veer away from their love of deep fried, there's some amazing restaurants to try.
Awesome. Favorite way to de-stress?
Probably watching a show, snuggling up with my dog.
And if you had to choose to live near the beach or the mountains, which would it be?
Honestly,
you're in Canada, so maybe it's already pretty biased.
Like, I'm kind of like, I'm both right now because I'm Vancouver Island, but I grew up in Calgary in Alberta near the Rocky Mountains. So there's something special about the mountains. So I'd have to go mountains, but right now I'm fortunate to have access to both.
Oh, wow. Perfect place to be then. Yeah, I haven't been to Canada, but it is on my list. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah. Put Banff on there, put like Lake Louise. You got to come to the island, check out the ocean, the whales, all of it. Yeah. You'd love it. You'd love it.
One day in this post COVID world, hopefully things will open back up and we'll be able to travel internationally again, but till then I'll live vicariously through my guests. And where can listeners connect with you, contact you, reach out?
You know what, honestly, probably the best thing is my website, inspiredlivingnutrition.com. You can learn more about me, and from there you can kind of access me on Instagram and all that other good stuff.
Well, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on to the show today. I have super loved our conversation. It's been fantastic talking about nutrition and so much more. So thanks for coming on to the show.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.